that's a huge part of forecasting goal management, is assessing and adjusting. Like, there's something that has changed, and it's like, well, why hasn't it changed? What are we going to do about it? And so that's part of it. Just having those metrics that you're looking at and the accountability to it.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the CEO and co-founder at ProcurementExpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your company spend without buying an ERP, but we're not here to talk about that today. Instead, I've got Shane Bender from Bender CFO Services to talk about one of my favorite topics, which is agency finances. And why is it my favorite topic? Well, my wife runs an agency and I love to rib her relentlessly about how terrible a business that is and how cyclical it is and what a terrible life she's made for herself. And of course, she turns around and accuses me of being way too boring, just managing purchase orders for people who no one cares about. She's bringing joy and excitement into the world. All I'm doing is sending them home 10 minutes early. Well, that's my retort anyway. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And we've got a very useful resource. If you do run an agency, you want to stay to the end because we are going to give you a guide to taking that cyclical nature out of your business. And Shane's going to give that to you if you are one of the few true stalwarts who stay to the end. So let's get started. Shane, why don't you kick us off by telling us something about you that not many people know?
Well, no, I appreciate you having me on your podcast here, James. This is a great experience. And yeah, I mean, a lot of people probably know that, I mean, personally know that I have four kids. I have two twin identical boys. They're about to graduate from high school. And, you know, one of the things that I like to do, and these boys have the same, I guess, interest, and that is we like to look at weather forecasts, like weather models. And when I was a kid growing up, it was much more rudimentary. You had to kind of wait for the news to come on, or you could go use the National Weather Service, but there was no websites and all these models weren't easily accessible. But I like to go, and you can go, and I'm in the United States, so we could go to the National Weather Service. They have forecast discussions, and there's all these different models, computer models that are complex, like the North American model and the Euro model and the Canadian model and the GFS. There's a bunch of them. And I just like to look at that, especially when it's winter weather, because it's so many iterations of it. And I think it has some correlations to what I like to do in business, which is forecasting, you know. And really the people complain about the weather forecast, like the weather, they never get it right. Well, they're changing it all the time and they've gotten a lot more accurate at least a day or two out than they used to when I was a kid. And so that's the kind of thing that I like to do in business too. So I don't know if everybody knows about my weird, nerdy looking at weather models.
Well, listen, you can't be too nerdy for the Gross Profit Podcast. That's the whole point of this thing, right? So that's interesting. I thought, you know, largely I thought like weather forecasting seemed to be kind of a solved problem. Like, it's amazing. Google will tell me at 11 o'clock it's going to start raining, at 3 o'clock it's going to be sunshining, and right, it seems like way more. When I was a kid, just like you, I just got one dot on a map that covered about 50 miles, and then we just have a number and that would be it. But now it seems to be wrong. Yeah. So do you like download them on your computer and play with them, or what's the discussion around, like what's the debate like?
Well, I mean, you know, that now of course everything's in the cloud, so you just go to these websites. And you can, a lot of the models will release every about 6 hours, and they change significantly. You could, especially if you look out 2 weeks, it's very inaccurate with models 2 weeks out. And right. I mean, and just like anything, if you're doing a business forecast and you're trying to forecast, you know, 6 months from now, it's going to be much more inaccurate than forecasting in the current month. Well, weather models are like that too. And you'll notice that if you look at the different runs, when you start to look at weather, just say tomorrow or 2 days out, it gets extremely much more accurate and it doesn't change as much. So it just shows you how much better they're utilizing all this data. And it's a massive amount of data. And so, yeah, you just go onto these websites and you just see the run and it'll just kind of show you the temperature changes and the precipitation changes. And, you know, I personally kind of like winter weather. We don't get a whole lot of crazy winter. Well, I live in Texas, so North Texas, Now, if you're in the southern part of Texas, you don't really get a whole lot of winter weather at all. But north part of Texas, you get some every once in a while, and it's interesting, and just to see all the different versions of that. And yeah, they'll tell you all these, like, if you're going to get snow, how many inches you might get. If you're going to, the temperature's going to drop, which in my part of Texas, we like temperature could drop 50 degrees. We've had situations where it's dropped 50 degrees in one day, which is crazy, but it'll tell you that kind of thing. It's kind of fun. Oh, 50 degrees Fahrenheit for those, obviously in the United States.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, well, it's the same thing,
Doesn't
like
work with
50.
Celsius quite as much.
It's the same thing, it's just a different scale, right? So one isn't
Right,
one Fahrenheit, one Celsius, I think so. Yeah,
yeah.
that's true. Okay, and is you're right about the forecasting there. Like I remember I've had hours and hours long discussion arguing over our cash flow forecast or budget or whatever, And then down on one line, we really argue about things left, right, and center. And then we go to another line, typically the revenue. And then there we have this massive assumption that goes in. And you're like, well, that assumption is just so wobbly. Why bother spending all your time arguing over the tiny details of the, let's say, the not even the cost of goods sold, but like let's just say whether we're going to have how many marketing people or whatever, or on the cost side, when can you really forecast at all when there's giant assumptions? I guess is weather the same? You have to make giant assumptions, and those assumptions are so wide that it kind of can blow the whole model open.
Yeah, that's a good question. There's some people who's like, why do I even forecast? Why do we even forecast the weather? Always wrong, as they say. Well, I do think that you learn a lot from forecasting because you have to kind of just take the revenues. Like, we got to go through and determine, and a marketing agency specifically, which I have a strong niche in that industry, which is what you mentioned, James. We work with some other industries, but I have over 20 years of experience in that industry, so I know immediately, like, okay, these are good metrics, these are good trends that you want to see. But like, you start with your existing contracts many times, and you're trying to understand what they all are, and sometimes people don't even really know that. It's like, well, if you haven't trended that out, and then you look at your pipeline of opportunities. And if I've got a business that says that they want to grow 30 or 40% in revenue, and their pipeline's small, I'm going to be like, well, that's not logical. We've got a disconnect here. And so, and then it becomes an unidentified target. Like, well, we don't know where that's coming from. And you're like, well, you can't have an, if, say you're a $5 million agency, and you say that you want to be $8 million in next year. And well, if you look at your existing contracts, and let's say the number of your existing contracts is, you're already at 5 million, it's 5 million. That's fine. And your pipeline says that you got another million in the pipeline of opportunities for new business. That's 6 million. And you want to be an $8 million business. Well, you got a $2 million unidentified plug you got to figure out how to get. And is that reasonable? Is that possible? Have you ever done that before? Or do you have the sales team to support that? All of those things. And so just kind of having that exercise is extremely valuable. And then what we do with revenue, and of course we do the same thing with cost, but I'll focus on revenue, is you then compare, especially your forecast, to what actuals were. And so if you're forecasting a month or two out, I think you should be fairly accurate. You should know how your revenue is going to look next month. Like, and if you're way off, then by you doing the exercise of comparing your actuals per client, per service to your forecast, you can start to get smarter at it. And I guarantee you they do the same thing with weather. They're like, why are we off? What happened here? Oh, there was a something in a wrong in our assumptions, and you get better at it. It's never 100% accurate, but you get better at it, and it's hugely valuable.
Very good. Okay, so what I heard there was A, okay, you mightn't be able to tell the future, but you can definitely tell what's impossible straight away, right? That's a benefit, like something obvious flaw in the system. And then maybe 5 years is a bit of a stretch, but definitely month one and two, three, four, like that's where you, if you're not able to do that, maybe there's a problem in your business. Okay, so just before I move off the personal side here, we got straight into it, but you live in Texas, and I always think, well, the benefit of living in Texas is great weather, great warm weather, but you just seem to throw that out the window, and you seem to.
Oh, the weather's all over the board in Texas. I mean, we got, I mean, Now it's pretty consistently hot in July and August, so we know the weather's going to be hot then, but the rest of the year can definitely change. And we do get a little bit of winter. It's relatively short. And there's like a funny thing is there's these little, I don't know what you call them, maybe memes, sort of like where it's like you've got six different seasons of Texas or something. It's like, or
Right.
actually it might be eight. There's just all kinds of seasons. And then you think that winter's over with, and then all of a sudden it comes back in April with a couple cold days. And then we laugh about the same thing about fall. It's like, oh, it's fall's here, and then that was a fake fall. It's back to summer again. But except for
Yeah.
July and August, that's just hot.
Yeah.
But yeah, we get a lot of thunderstorms, tornadoes. So you gotta keep this time of year, which is spring, is you gotta be watching for that. So yeah.
Very good. Well, in Ireland, the joke about weather is summer is we get 2 weeks of summer every year, randomly distributed somewhere between April and September, and you have no idea when it's going to show up, you know? Okay, cool. So let me just tell me, just to establish your credibility here, make sure we're not just letting people off the street onto the Gross Profit podcast. You've got an established business. How did you rise to become a fractional CFO? What was your route?
Yeah, well, I mean, I started out of school. I went to Baylor University, got my MBA, and ended up getting my CPA, which Certified Public Accountant. So I've started around the accounting side of things, working at KPMG, and eventually worked in some industry like assistant controller positions. And then around 2009, I've always really interested in more of the finance side and financial planning and analysis side of things, and really started to move into that arena, director of financial planning analysis, director of VP finance, those kinds of roles. And in 2015, I learned about fractional CFO work, which I really had not known anything about it. And at the time, it was still a little more, just a little bit less, people just weren't aware of it. Anyway, I started my business in 2016 with, at that point in time, over 15 years of experience doing fractional CFO work. And over the last 9 years, I've got an opportunity to work with many different clients and industries. Typically, they're in that 1 to 2 million on the small side, revenue size to 20 million in revenue, because those particular companies typically are small enough where you wouldn't necessarily need a full-time CFO. Many times they're just not doing anything in that arena, or much in that arena, or somebody else is trying to do it, like an owner. And then, once they get a little bit larger, sometimes they don't. They eventually hire one. So that's the reason. But it's been a blessing over the last 9 years to be able to do that for a lot of different clients. And that's where I've come over the last for, over the, but yeah, right now, I mean, like I said before, I have over 20 years working with agencies, and just quite a bit of different life experience to kind of help with companies of those sizes.
Very good. And what's been your biggest business brag or success so far? So what's defined your career so far
Yeah.
commercially?
Well, I mean, I really, it's been, it was a good experience when I went in 2005. I went to a marketing agency, and at the time, search marketing, digital marketing, which was that specific focus, was very new. Google had just recently launched. I mean, I had to explain to people all the time what I was doing. It just was so new. And that company was a little bit in startup mode, so I had to kind of go in there and help build some good processes financially. Billing, simple billing processes were erratic. And ultimately, that company was acquired a few years later. And so that was a big accomplishment, a huge payout there for the owners and just for the business. And I said, grew really fast from 2005 to 2011. It just quadrupled in there during that time period. So I was part of that team and helped them through kind of an earnout period. So that was great experience, because I've been able to utilize that within a fractional CFO space, because a lot of businesses that they may not want to be acquired immediately, but they want to build a business that's acquirable and has, a good value to it. Another client that I took part in, they haven't taken it all the way to the acquisition point, but they grew, they quadrupled. I started working with them in 2017. And I mean, I can't take credit for like being the only person to help quadruple. And, you know, it takes a ton of people for that to work, obviously. So I certainly am not trying to take credit for any of that, but I was definitely part of the team to help grow. And that particular agency between 2017 and 2022 also quadrupled in size from like a $4 to $16 million company. So I've been part of that journey a few times, you know, so, you know, just working through issues. But, you know, sometimes the win is the other way around. It's like, you know, everybody wants the success of revenue, you know, quadrupling and their value and their EBITDA going up and their profit going up so that they can be more valuable. Sometimes in the other way around happens where you go through challenges. The agencies or any business goes through challenges where they have to make hard decisions, cut expenses, restaff, restructure everything, and just having person to kind of work through that from a cash flow standpoint and just work through the how sometimes the stress and anxiety related to that is helpful too. So it can work on both sides.
Well, I think you should take credit because if they went bankrupt, they might well just blame the CFO. So you got to take credit for the things. Sometimes you get blamed for stuff you didn't do, so you might as well take credit for things you had a hand in as well. I'm going to give you that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, some people have a tendency to blame all the negative stuff.
I love that expression, success has a thousand fathers, but failure only one mother, that sort of thing.
True, yeah.
All right, great. So now you specialize with agencies, which means you've got a particular expertise with them, and you've brought along three blind spots that you frequently see agencies have when it comes to their finances, which makes my life very easy because we get to talk through them. So why don't you work through here? What's the first blind spot you most commonly see?
Well, I mean, the first one is kind of like misaligned pricing or maybe undervaluing services, which can go along with costs too. It's hand in hand, but it's just not understanding their current pricing structure and how that relates to the services they're providing. And so a lot of times what we see in that situation, especially with service-oriented businesses, is that when they look at their gross margin, which in this case is their revenue less their cost of services, the people that are servicing their clients, but this is specifically for service-oriented, and that's what agencies are. So we're going to keep that industry focused right now. And, you know, they're not understanding what that is. And if, first of all, sometimes they don't even know what it is. They're like, we don't even look at that. Once we figure it out, you look at it and you can see, I mean, I've had a few situations recently and I'm like, your gross margin is 30% and you're not going to be profitable in that situation. You know, that's just not going to work in an agency environment, not long-term, unless you have like an extreme, you'd have to have absolutely very little overhead, which is not ideal. And so I'm like, hey, you need to be at 50 to 60%. And then we try to figure out why they're not at that, you know, and it could be a lot of reasons. They could have clients that are underpaying. They're over-servicing them for what they're paying, and therefore their margin's lower. And then you got to figure out, well, why did that happen? In that case, they're probably a combination of undervaluing in the client, their services to the client. They didn't price it out right. Or they have too many people working on that and they're inefficient and you got to work through their efficiency issues. So that's a big situation. So, I mean, I literally have an exact example right now where this particular client, so this happens a lot where, especially with agencies, where you may have one or two clients paying everybody's bill. I mean, they're the profitable ones and everybody else is unprofitable. I mean, and well, this particular client lost a major client themselves, which was sort of covering over a lot of the sins of the other part of the agency. It was just covering over a lot of the issues. So we're kind of breaking it apart, doing some client profitability analysis. And, you know, it's very clear that there needs to be a restructure around that because they're just not profitable enough. So that's just the analysis that I recommend doing. So that's the first one that happened.
I've got a couple of questions around this. So I'm kind of impressed that you go in and people know at all what their margin is, because Is it not true? Well, you tell me. Like, they go in and, like, to know what your margin is, that means everyone's got to be timesheeting, right? Or is there another way?
Yeah, that's a good question. No, and they're not. A lot of them are not. I mean, sometimes they are. It depends on how they, I guess, bill their time. Like, if you have an agency that bills based on the hours, then they're doing that. But a lot of agencies, especially digital marketing agencies, they'll bill either a combination of fees or percentage of media or a flat fee, possibly flat recurring fee model, or they have a hybrid of both. Sometimes they'll have these other tech fees, but they're just based on a different methodology than ours. And so you have to, in that case, if they don't have a time system, usually what we've had to do is almost survey or do some analysis on where people are spending their time. And it's a little bit more like, okay, well, this client has these people on there. How much time are they spending, or how much time is this person spending on their clients? So I'm working on four clients and I spend 25% of my time on each one, or, you know, it's a little bit ballpark figure, but it's better than nothing if they don't have a time system. I mean, obviously if they, you know, having a time system is better, but you know, agencies don't always like to do that. So I usually have to survey and get, like, this particular little last example, they don't have a time system. And so what they did is they looked at the clients that each employee is working on and the number of assignments, like the number of different projects and tasks that they're working on, and broke it out that way and distributed a percentage of that way. So effectively they're like, well, I work on, you know, 20% of this, 20% of that, 50% of that. So now once we get the percentages, we can apply that to their salary rates, their hourly rates, or basically their salary. And then we can mark up the cost a little bit, fully loaded salary cost, because it's salary plus benefits and all the bonuses and everything else they've got. So we mark it up to that, and that gives us direct costs by client. And that will lead us into the gross margin that we want to look at.
Okay, so, and I said we couldn't get too nerdy for this podcast, so I'm going to prove my point here. So when you do that, then, do you use like a class in QuickBooks to break out those costs? Or how do you, like, if I get it, let's say if I have a monthly management report from my CFO and I run an agency and you say a client profitability, should I be expecting that monthly, or is that a quarterly or annual thing? Is it too much effort for quarterly or annual, or for monthly? What's your standard there?
Well, yeah, client profitability, I usually don't recommend. It's usually a lot of work to do that monthly, depending on the systems that they're using and how good they track everything. In the example that I just mentioned, where you're trying to get surveys of people, it's probably better to look at it quarterly. And honestly, it'd probably look overkill to do monthly, because your staffing is not changing that fast usually. I mean, the staff on a client, it's the same client for a few months. I mean, they're not like most agencies I've ever worked with are like, you know, you have this person working with that client and they don't switch out every single month, you know, because they want to have experience. They built, you know, there's rapport with the client and all that. So the staffing adjustments don't change that often. The revenue, you definitely get your revenue from QuickBooks. I mean, you have all that in there from your billing perspective. And so that's usually really easy. I would say, though, I don't usually put the costs per customer breakout by client in QuickBooks. That would be a lot of detail. So we usually do a lot of that analysis outside of the system in a spreadsheet or something like that. But I just kind of, you know, you don't want to create too much work within QuickBooks, but I try to get as much of it in QuickBooks as you can. Obviously, you want to do like total gross margin, get that in QuickBooks. Maybe you could break out gross margin by service type, use classes for that. But when it comes to clients, it gets a little harder, because then you literally would have to go in there and allocate people's labor by client. And that becomes a lot of work. So it's kind of weighing how much work do you want to put, you know, do you want to create all these like allocation journals versus just doing a spreadsheet? And sometimes it's faster just to do that in a spreadsheet.
Okay, well, my takeaway there is if your client engagement is like 3 to 6 months, there's definitely not much point in doing it much more than that anyway, because it's not going to change. Okay, that's good. Okay, let's move on to blind spot number two.
Yeah, that one is a cash flow management, poor cash flow management, effectively. And you'll see that, I mean, it maybe seem simple Oh, of course, you've got to have cash, but there's a number of things that people, that agencies do. Sometimes they just don't bill consistently or bill in accordance to their contract. If an agency's billing media, bill it in advance. Sometimes you can bill a whole quarter in advance. I even have a client that bills the whole year in advance. Now that's like the holy grail of cash flow, to get a client to actually allow you to bill the whole year in advance so you can staff and manage things that much ahead of time. But the more that you can bill in advance and collect upon that really can help your cash flow, especially if you're doing a lot of media purchases. And so that's very specific to agencies again, but that is hugely important because if you're doing a lot of media purchases, and let's say we'll pick on some of the big ones, especially in the digital marketing space, Google, Meta, or which is Facebook, those types of ones, they're going to bill you 30, 45 days after that you run the media. And if you don't have been paid by your client yet, then you're at risk of those campaigns going dark or it affecting other clients. And that happens, then you feel obligated to pay the bill. And obviously, if you pay the bill before you receive payment, that puts you in a huge cash crunch itself. It has nothing to do with your profitability. It's just literally you're kind of being the bank here. And so you want to be ahead of that. You want to get that cash up front, and then you can actually be on the other side of this. You could actually float it a little bit if you do it right. So that's one. So AR collections is huge. Just being able to have an AR collections process, like following up. I mean, something as simple as, hey, this is now past due, sending an email to make sure that they got the invoice. I mean, I know it seems like it's relatively simple. It's like, of course you should do that, but people don't do this. They send an email, I don't know, after it's 60 days past due, and they're like, oh, we never got the invoice. Like it got stuck in their spam folder. I don't know where it went. Or somebody left and it went to the wrong place. And then you're like, you just wasted 60 days. So that, no, that's relatively simple, but that happens a lot. Just being able to have your cash flow modeling to know what it is. I mentioned a lot about forecasting, and forecasting, to do good forecasting, you got to kind of forecast your revenue. You got to forecast your expenses. You got to forecast kind of your AR and AP and your balance sheet, your distributions, different components. There's so many components, tax distributions, are you taking distributions out for taxes or paying taxes? All of that is part of cash flow. And so having a model that pieces all that together so you can see where your cash flow is hugely important. And if you're in a cash crunch, you got to break it down weekly. And that gets really, I mean, that's a lot of sometimes an extra work, but that you're like, well, there might be a week every month where things sort of kind of converge on that. I have another client where it's like he pays his contractors at the first of the month, he has payroll at the same time, and at the same time, that's the point where he just sends his invoices out. So he's kind of like waiting for some payments to come in for clients. So that's his low end every month, and that's when he's likely to run out of cash,
Let me
or he needs a
ask
line of
here.
credit in place to handle things like.
Yeah, let me ask. I'm curious. In these agencies, the ones I've been involved with, they often have account directors who are kind of these commercial kind of middlemen between the creatives or the, whatever was being created, and they're kind of managing the commercial relationship. The best explanation I've heard of that was by a friend of mine who said that her job was to look after the client, and she did that by making them think that she may sleep with them or without actually sleeping with them, and in order to keep them happy, which might be a slight exaggeration, but like you get the idea. The idea is to make the client happy and to smooth over the cracks. So between sometimes you have quite cantankerous creatives on the other side who are not necessarily that client facing. So you have this sort of middle layer, if you like, to manage the relationship. And is that the person who should own the commercial, like that awkward billing conversation about, well, you wanted to start a new project, but you haven't paid for the last, or you've got this 45-day bill or whatever. How do you set that up? Should that be on the account director, or do you separate that out to someone on the finance team who's going to be the baddie?
I mean, you start with the finance team. A lot of times just the finance team having a normal process of following up on past due invoices, like an email or that kind of thing. I mean, they sometimes the account service director or person that's running that account likes to be copied on things like that, but it might start with the with finance. Now, the problem is that once it gets past due and they're not responding, there is a point where it does have to go to account services to talk to them about that because they're not responding, to finance sending out information. And, in that case, that's typically recommended that the account director talk to them and, see if, are we sending it to the wrong place? I mean, first of all, you want to, you don't want to be accusatory, but like, are we sending this to the wrong place? Is there, what's wrong? Is there something wrong with the process here that we need to fix? Is the finance team, or sometimes their own, the client's finance and marketing team themselves are not communicating, it's their own internal problem and, that kind of thing. So before you start getting to a point where, there's obviously a point where it's like, sorry guys, we're going to have to shut down some of these campaigns because you're not paying and have breached a contract. And, that's the worst case scenario, but you definitely have to get there sometimes because what I've seen with agencies, there's a tendency, especially if the company's having financial problems and they're not able to pay their bills, so they're trying to solve the problem by improving their own marketing so they can increase their sales, right? And so they don't really want to cut off the revenue generating arm of their own business, which will help them pay their bills, So it's and so sometimes marketing agencies will carry out a little bit longer because they keep saying, hey, we're going to get funding or work, it's going to get better next quarter when like during the holiday season, it's going to get better, And so they'll carry it too long and then you run the risk of them going bankrupt and you don't get paid on anything. So it's can be tough when it gets to say, 60, 90 days past due. So you have to watch that closely.
So blind spot number three is no financial strategy tied to business goals. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, this is, first of all, if a business doesn't, they may have goals, they may not have goals, whatever those may be for the year. I always recommend that they do have some financial goals for the year. And then that gets tied specifically to the measurements and goals being smarter, smart goals, specific, measurable, actionable, relevant, time bound, those types of goals. I follow this other guy. He adds exciting and risky to it, Michael Hyatt. And so he called them smarter goals, but having those and specifically tying them out. So, if you have a goal for your revenue growth to be this, and then we put that in the model and we make sure that is something we look at each month, and then we assess and adjust accordingly, which that's a huge part of forecasting goal management is assessing and adjusting. Like there's something that has changed and it's like, well, why hasn't it changed? What are we going to do about it? And so that's part of it. Just having those metrics that you're looking at and the accountability to it. When I do a CFO meeting every month with my clients and we look at their actuals and their current forecast compared to their original goal. Like, hey, we wanted to hit 7 million in revenue this year. We want 15% EBITDA percent. We want 50% gross margin. We want revenue by client to be this. I mean, certain metrics that they're looking at and we talk about that and how they're doing. So having that accountability too is helpful.
Very cool. Very good. All right. So if people want to get in touch with you, or we did tease at the top of the episode, this ultimate guide for forecasting for agencies, maybe you could tell us a bit about that, what's in there. We're going to link it up in the show notes.
We created this. It's a PDF ultimate guide for forecasting is for agencies specifically. Then you can go to that particular landing page and put the link in there, and that you literally just put your email address in there and download it. As far as contacting us, just our website, BenderCFOServices.com. You can contact us there. You can schedule a discovery call, which, just being, especially if you're in a situation where you don't feel like you're having a lot of forecasting or you don't really understand where your business is headed. Maybe you don't understand what the numbers are telling you, like from a probability standpoint. A lot of the things we talked about, that's exactly what we do. And so we have a discovery call. There's no cost to that. We just talk through issues and problems and challenges and seeing if we're a good fit. And then that's definitely can go to the website and do that. So those are the best places. But yeah, that forecasting guide. We also have a, if you want a little bit more detail about forecasting, I did write a book, and there's an audio book called Forecast Your Future, How Small Businesses Exchange Stress and Chaos for Cash and Clarity. And this is not specific to just agencies. I think that the information in there can work for any small business, and try to write it in a way that's it's easy for people to follow. There's some guides and templates there in that book. And yeah, you can, like I said, you can go to Amazon, you listen to the audiobook too. So there's some good resources there for you.
Very good. All right. Well, thanks for that. And thank you for listening. If you have been listening this far into the episode, congratulations. Your special reward is to be able to go to grossprofitpodcast.com, click on the events tab. And if you are a fractional CFO yourself, we run a monthly mastermind where we bring together more than 100 CFOs from who've been on the podcast at this stage. And you get a chance to, you bring a business challenge along. So how a mastermind work is you bring a business challenge along. We put you into a little group of three or four other fractional CFOs, and you get to brainstorm that problem with your peers, basically. So it's very successful. You have people who've been in business 30 years or 1 year, put them together or into groups. Last mastermind session, we focused on explaining the value of being a fractional CFO. My wife came along, funnily enough, who runs an agency herself, and she explained how you can better explain your value as a fractional CFO. So we have sort of theme sessions as well. So you can sign up for that at grossprofitpodcast.com/events, and you'd be very welcome to come along. And thank you, Shane, for being on the show. This has been great.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. I enjoyed talking with you today.